Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the fifth and final season of Star Trek Discovery. And this was a 10-episode season with a overriding plotline throughout of finding the progenitor's tech and whatnot. And most of the episodes were the usual 45, 50-minute-ish length, give or take. The final one was, what, an hour and a half almost?
Yeah.
Which I hadn't realized until we were starting to watch it. I have enjoyed this show. I don't think it's, for me, as good as Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
It's not very Trek, as a general blanket statement. I think this season was more of what I would consider a traditional Trek show.
I think it was more of an attempt to be a traditional Trek show.
Yes, I'll give you that. More of a go out, explore, and discover.
Well, and also Easter eggs towards things like there was an android like Data, there was the progenitors, there was mention of Betazoid, it's one of the few shows, I mean, we always go into the final episode with here's our checklist. It's one of the few times where I felt they went into the final episode with a checklist. And I don't mean that in the best of ways.
Yeah.
They've always had an overarching plot line for each of their seasons. I don't think that's as beneficial as they think it is.
For me, this overarching plot line is most comparable to the Red Angel one.
Yeah, it felt very similar to that, but the difference is the Red Angel one introduced Pike, Spock, and was a better storyline. It also was what ended with them getting kicked, 900 years in the future.
For me, the Red Angel one was undermined towards the end with, oh, it turned out to be us all along.
Yeah. Well, this, if going after the progenitor's tech of the secret of life itself, it was overblown. It wasn't something they were going to be able to get and keep the narrative universe intact.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they kind of wormed their way out of it there at the end.
Well, and because I've watched the TV show Andromeda, I didn't like how they wormed their way out.
Okay, finding the progenitor tech, getting the secret to creating life itself, chucking it into a black hole. There's a couple of YouTube channels that do the this is how it should have ended thing. I can see them kind of doing the quick 30-second synopsis to get people, okay, that's where it is, kicking the thing to the black hole, cutting then to the progenitor in the thing, screaming, no! It's like, yep, we picked wrong.
Well, technically, that wasn't a living progenitor in there.
No. Well, from the way they phrased the technobabble, she's not living now, but she was living then, and somehow the two time points touched.
Okay, I'll give you that. But, I mean, for me, she was very much thrown into the Kevin Sorbo position in the TV show Andromeda.
Yeah, I knew they were going to have to kind of cheat a little bit to have this scavenger hunt to get to the MacGuffin at the end. Like I said, you're not going to get the MacGuffin. It's the secret of life itself. They were going to have to kind of cheat on that. And the minute the progenitor said, yeah, we found this, I'm like, okay, so they're not really who they had claimed to be all this time.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I think, undercut a lot of the season.
Well, and it was supposed to be the technology to creating life. And we went back and watched the episodes that, according to the almighty internet, were the episodes from both the original series and the next gen, where it's, you know, even the most, like, one line of dialogue, loosest thread, could be deemed to tie to this.
Like, two episodes of the original series that mentioned kind of the ancient ones that created life, one had left a robot, and some stuff like that. And tangential basis, which had no bearing at all with the progenitor tech we see here. And then the next gen one, where Picard and a bunch of other people, some Romulans, some Cardassians, a couple of Klingons, all find out they've got common DNA from the progenitors, and we see a progenitor, which looked oddly similar to the shapeshifters from Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
So it's not like there was a wealth of knowledge from the shows. I think they'd done a bit more in the books.
Well, I went through the whole season figuring that this technology was going to be kind of in quotes, and that it wasn't going to be an actual technology the way we think of computers, devices, technology when we got to it.
Oddly enough, it was.
Yeah.
It was essentially a Star Trek version of a TARDIS.
Yeah.
It somehow connected to various either planets or facsimiles thereof or something. It seemed like a self-contained, I'm trying to think how to phrase this.
To me, it was almost a self-contained galaxy or universe with portals to the various planets.
Well, I was going to say, it had either the full ecosystem or subset of it or something. Like, it was one of these various, you know how they always hit the humans get trapped in the little zoo kind of a thing?
Yeah.
Like that on a grander scale, but to the point of, you know how, like, at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, that warehouse just keeps going.
Yes.
This is literally infinite.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting idea, but it was a bit overblown.
Well, and then we get to the, for lack of a better term, the machine with the interface where you need to know the password.
They'd gotten the cheat, you know, the hint on that or whatever. And the minute it's, oh, there are all these triangles, and build the one, you know, inside the many or something like that. And I'm like, okay, there are 9 triangles. You're basically going to have 3 on each side facing out, so you've got an empty space of a triangle inside. It can't be anything but that.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Burnham is there kind of racking her brain. Oh, I've got to really think about hard on this. She's been trained by the Vulcans. The first season version of her would have had it in about 3 seconds, if that.
I was amazed the difference between first season Michael Burnham and 5th season Michael Burnham.
I thought it was interesting where we had the one episode where we saw first season Burnham again.
Yeah.
Not only does the character look different, she acts radically different.
Yeah.
She was very Vulcan-like for a human at the beginning. Here, she's almost all emotion, and some of that was an evolution of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that, I think, was a retooling of the character intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
I do think a lot of it also happened during that missing year where she jumped to the future before Discovery got there.
Yeah.
And I don't object to these changes. I like the character at the end, frankly, a bit better than the one at the beginning.
I would agree with that.
And I think, by and large, they grew the characters well because she's not the only one that's radically different from the beginning. Stamets.
Yes.
He was a jerk at the beginning.
Yeah.
And he's much more endearing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Saru, they evolved and did quite a bit with over the course of the series.
Yes.
And I felt ended on a good note for him.
Well, I believe it was a first season episode where Michael is in very Vulcan mode. She's trying to figure out if the creature with the connection to the spore drive is predatory or not, basically. Mm-hmm. And she tricks Saru into coming into the room and getting close to it to see if his prey response will trigger.
Yeah, if his biological response, kicks in.
The fear response. And, I mean, Saru is feeling very betrayed and all these things. And she does flip it around with the, but look, you were angry at me, but you weren't scared by him. This is important scientific information, this, that, and the other. But the Saru from that point and in that scene versus the diplomat Saru that we got this season, particularly the one that we see in negotiations with the Breen at the end of the season.
Yeah, that was a much more intense Saru than the very almost scaredy cat version we had at times at the beginning.
Yeah.
And his character had a lot of, I don't say ups and downs, because I think it was all, I mean, Doug Jones did an amazing job with this character from day one.
Yeah.
And just as they gave him more, he did even better with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the character's path, his relationship with Michael, definitely had huge ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of fun stuff with that. And there were a few things where they were definitely on the season kind of touching back to the beginning. I would have liked if they'd had, well, and they did have a touch to the Mirror Universe when they basically pulled a ship out of it. But I would have liked to have had a little bit more on kind of the events of and some stuff like that. We finally get some payoff on who Kovac is because he's been somebody they've interacted with here in the future and stuff. And they did okay with that.
Yeah, that's where I was.
It felt a little indulgent to go do it. I think they'd wanted to play that out a little longer, but didn't have more seasons to do it in. It made a certain degree of sense. But the minute they start panning behind his desk at the different things on the wall, it's Geordi's visor, Sisko's baseball, a bottle of Picard's wine.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's definitely a time traveler. He's either, you know, because at first it's, is he part of Section 31 or whatever? Is he part of the Department of Temporal Affairs? And it turns out he probably is, although they don't spell it out.
Yeah.
They give a name that ties into some past Trek stuff. And it worked, but I don't know that it's going to have wowed a lot of people. I think many people are going to come out of it saying, huh?
Yeah.
So I think second season was the best season they did. The whole Red Angel stuff had pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
Spock, Pike, and a lot of just some of the stuff they did there. I think that's when they introduced Jet Reno.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they did quite a bit in that season and literally covered a lot of ground, given it led into, a complete change in the status quo for the ship, bouncing into the future and whatnot. The other seasons haven't been bad. The first season had pluses and minuses. A lot of it was, for me, getting over the fact it's not the kind of Trek show I wanted. I wanted something more like Strange New Worlds. That's a bit more hopeful, a bit more episodic. I don't mind an arc for the season. I object, to a certain degree, on a singular mission for the season.
Well, and Discovery isn't what they initially pitched when they were doing the press conferences before they started filming and all that stuff, and were saying, hey, aren't you excited? This is what we're going to give you. They didn't deliver.
Yeah.
You know, they promised a show that was going to be about coming together, and they didn't deliver on that initial promise. And I think because of where they set my expectations, they've always had a hard battle.
Well, it was also the first Trek show after a long gap,
mm-hmm.
and Enterprise was the previous one, and there was a bit more of a back-to-basics, building things up sort of a deal.
Well, and there are aspects of this show that have always been, we like our bright, we like our shiny, we like our technology for the sake of technology. So, like, in this specific season, what drove me batty is... see, you already see it coming.
I know exactly where you're going with this.
We can't walk from the bridge to the connected ready room. We tap our chest and transport.
Gratuitous transporter use, because they all have personal transporters. But once, that actually played into the story.
Yeah, but it was just so annoying.
I would have actually had, near the end of that thing, them realize, you know, we got lucky. This put us in a good position.
Yes.
To save the day. It could have just as equally gone bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine if they had bounced into a time frame where, because they had been transporting when the MacGuffin event happens, they ceased to exist.
Well, and how is it that they were the only two people transporting when it happened, given how everybody seemed to be just transporting instead of walking 10 feet?
I would have really liked to have seen an episode probably leading up to that, or maybe even at the beginning of that, where somebody is, Jet Reno would probably be the right character to do this, walking from like engineering to the bridge or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's walking, you always see these flashes in the background of these other people bouncing around. And it's like, this is getting a little out of hand, folks.
Yeah.
It was gratuitous. And I never understood how they set the destination. At that point, it's not technology. It is magic.
Yes.
And I was going to say okay with, but really kind of not. Okay, we can use transporter replicator technology to whip out a phaser or a dermal regenerator or whatever tech we need.
Yep.
You know, we got the hologram tricorder stuff built into the suit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I like having cool tech. But there's a point at which, if as a creator you haven't thought through the ramifications, it becomes too powerful of a technology.
Well, now I will say in the Bouncing Around Time episode, Stamens was the third person that was affected by it. And he gets into this one where they're just kind of, as I recall, looping through a time period. And it's in the past. He has to clear engineering And our new first officer, Rayner, is supposed to meet him there. He clears engineering. Rayner can come in. At one point, Rayner is commenting with, well, that worked even faster than. And he's like, yeah, I was a bit of a jerk back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are other times when it's, I can't believe they don't know that's not real. I need to train my people better. You know, so they had some funny bits in that.
Yeah. Yeah. They did well with that episode. But a lot of the point of that episode was to set up the Breen as the big bad race.
Yes.
They're going to destroy the Federation, literally blow stuff up and whatnot.
But the Breen were undercut by Maul and Locke.
I don't feel we got payoff for the Breen.
No.
They were there as the big bad of the season, the obstacle to get past, the when we see their ships and they literally dwarf the Federation ship. The only other time we've seen any other ship do that was in the Star Trek movie when the Romulan mining ship from the future comes back and dwarfs the Kelvin by orders of magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Kelvin's a shuttle compared to this thing.
Well, Discovery flew around in the loading bay or whatever. In the
cargo bay or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
It's bad enough you've got a ship that big. But to then have a cargo bay that goes on big enough to fly a few starships through that's filled with air. I don't get how that works.
I don't know.
There were a few things that were a little gratuitous and whatnot. And not only did they have the cargo bay for that, but they spent so much of the time in the cargo bay. I'm not sure we spent much time on the bridge of that ship. I'm not sure if we spent any time on the bridge of that ship.
Well, I'm struggling because we were at some command consoles that weren't in the cargo bay. But I don't know where they were.
They looked like they were.
Well, Adira and the security guy.
Yeah, they were supposed to be elsewhere than the cargo bay, but it didn't look all that different from the ones in the cargo bay.
That's my problem.
Yeah. Until they get into that episode where they have to get on the Breen ship, where we see hallways and, again, this ostensibly command deck, the only thing we'd ever really seen was the cargo bay.
Yeah.
And they clearly reused that. I was going to say set, but it was predominantly a virtual set, I would imagine.
I would imagine, yeah.
So, I would have liked to have gotten to know the Breen a little bit better, to see more than just one of them without a helmet on.
I think the Breen they should have done that with was the one that Maul was using after Locke died when she was dealing with the Primarch.
Yeah.
His seemingly right-hand man.
Yeah. Between not seeing a face and there being no distinguishing markings on the armor, that character not only never really got a name, he wasn't really a character even if they gave him a name.
Yeah. But she seemed to be using him to sway the others and to undermine the Primarch.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
There were a couple of times when I felt like they thought Maul was doing something. And I'm like, I think I should be getting more out of this. And most of it was on that Breen ship.
Yeah. Yeah. They set Maul and Locke up as kind of the Bonnie and Clyde that kind of kicks off this whole race for the progenitor tech. And we follow them through the entire season. They're major players and whatnot. I didn't feel there was a good end to that storyline for them.
No.
And it felt like they had this great idea. Oh, well, let's go after the progenitor tech in the writer's room.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we need an opposing faction. Oh, we need an alien race to kind of be behind them and stuff. And I don't want to say it was like a by the numbers thing.
Well, the funny thing to me is, I didn't care for the big overarching thing, yet I liked the individual episodes. I liked the we have to run the race to recreate the journey whoever went on.
Yeah.
And the misunderstanding of how the technology we don't know about works. The belief that somebody has to survive the race and win the race and has to go be locked in the tower.
They have to be sacrificed for us to survive to the next year or whatever.
To get the reins. The not understanding that if nobody is sacrificed in the tower, but we close the door and trigger the machine, it will seed the clouds and the reins will come.
And that was a good episode. I mean, let's ignore the fact there was a blatant Prime Directive violation that they knew they were making.
Yes.
And no consequences. But I think that kind of underscores how they were doing really well on the episodic side of things.
Yeah.
And I think most of my unhappiness is on the serial narrative that they were so hot and heavy about. You know what I mean?
Well, and I loved the concept of the library that was hiding in the nebula when they needed it.
I did, but I thought it was a little convenient that suddenly Jet Reno had been doing half a million different jobs. It's like they used her. It's like the writer had been working on Strange New Worlds.
And confused her with the engineer.
And forgot which engineer they were dealing with.
Yes, I agree. That was my feeling as we watched it.
It's what, Peli or whatever on the other one that's been around for centuries and stuff?
Yes.
And Tig Notaro did a great job with that episode with Jet and just kind of ran with it and stuff. But it did seem a little far-fetched.
Yeah. Well, and I felt like they were doing, I want to phrase this, alternating episodes. So we have an episode where we find a clue and we deal with it. And then we have an episode where we don't have a clue in hand. We're either getting to a clue or being prevented from getting to a clue.
We're between clues or we're on a clue.
Yeah.
The one thing with the library episode, as fun as it was, one, the solution is to get in touch with your inner feelings.
Well, actually, that cracked me up, but what really busted me up was where the clue was hidden. Go get the crystal and throw it on the floor, get a library exhibit.
Yeah, take a library exhibit. It's in the other room. We'll give you a vague clue. I would have
it on the floor and break it in the middle of the library.
I would have had her go do that. There's nothing there. Oh, wrong exhibit.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
It looked like a museum exhibit because it's got the case over it and everything. I'm waiting for alarms to go off or something.
Yeah. That library, though, it's hard for me not to compare it to the library from Doctor Who where we first see River Song.
I loved the librarian in this.
She was good. She seemed familiar. We had to have seen her in something.
Yeah. Well, and I loved how she dealt with the Breen, with the whole, your privileges are revoked. Wait, that's not a threat? kind of reaction.
Yeah. There was a standard way to write that character, and they used her in that same function, but in the non-standard way.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Well, and I loved that Book, as the last surviving member of his species that they knew of.
Yeah.
Was entitled to the piece of the world tree that had been left with them. Because they didn't know what it was, they didn't know how to use it, and they felt a member of his world should take it and use it instead of it simply sitting there.
Yeah, it's dormant. Not meant to be on display if it's got a purpose that's needed.
Yes.
I would have liked if we had, in the final episode before the epilogues of epilogues, if we had touched back on that with the, there's something I need to do, or maybe they did touch it. Maybe that was his line of dialogue.
That was.
Walking in. I would have liked to have seen it getting planted or something.
Yes, me too.
Because then when we, flash forward 30 years or something, until you pointed out, oh, that's the tree at the end. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because he mentions that he went to the world where they dropped off some animal that now has a baby. And he planted the world tree. He says it at the wedding reception. That's why he was late.
It's a line of dialogue. It didn't have context at that point. By the time the context came 5-10 minutes later.
Yeah.
It was there. It wasn't done in a way to make it conducive for me to really connect it.
Yeah.
And the bit at the end, at the very end, we get Saru's wedding, which was expected and nice. The whole, let's get the whole crew together for a little bit, but that's really a dream sequence or a memory kind of a thing. Because we've got to tie this into the short trek that happened a few years back. That seemed like they were trying to tie this off in as much of a bow as they possibly could.
Well, and we'd already had a tie to that short trek in the time traveling episode.
We had. I just got the impression that it was not Michael's experience there that made them realize Kraft was going to get the ship and whatnot down the line.
I guess my point is that Michael and Rayner went to the ship after Kraft had been on board.
They could have tied that in a little better because when Zora the ship was saying, I'm not going to see you again, am I? It would have been nice if Michael had said, well, don't be so sure.
Yeah.
And if there was some way they could have used that to, get the ship back to Federation or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a good season. Like I said, wasn't their best.
Mm-hmm.
wouldn't say it was their worst either. I'm not sure what I would say was. And I don't think the show ever got into the, oh my God, you aired this? Because there have been a few episodes of a few other Trek shows where it's like, wow, that got on the air and I don't know how.
Yeah.
But I think this show is going to get grouped with Deep Space Nine in some respects.
Yes.
Both are a little atypical in terms of the type of show they are.
Mm-hmm.
Deep Space Nine, I think there's an aspect of it, the show, feeling, what do you mean we weren't as good as Voyager, Next Gen, whatever? Kind of the chip on your shoulder of a deal. I've already heard comments from people around Discovery, and I think a lot of it was from Frakes, who did some of the directing, of kind of taking a little bit of umbrage at Strange New Worlds being really popular and the show people want, and Discovery not.
Strange New Worlds hits all those marks of feeling like Trek. It's got the hope, it's got that episodic feeling, it explores, it discovers. Discovery, for all that it's named Discovery, most seasons doesn't do a lot of discovering.
They don't do a lot of discovering. They're a little, I don't say introspective, because that's not the right word, insular. And when it started, it had all this crazy holographic kind of tech and whatnot, and it was set well before the original series.
Yeah.
And if it had stayed in its native time frame, it would have been concurrent with Strange New Worlds. But even so, that feels more on the tech level of the original series, mm-hmm. even though, you know, give or take 5-10 years because it's a prequel. But to me, it's less some of that. I mean, some of it's clearly the window dressing. It looks more like old school classic Trek
mm-hmm.
in Strange New Worlds. This Discovery has always felt a little more Next Gen, Voyager, or beyond kind of a thing. But storytelling wise, again, while there's a loose serial aspect to the narrative in Strange New Worlds, it's heavy on the episodic.
Yeah.
Here, Discovery, like Picard after it, heavy on the serial season narrative, and the episodes are all in service to that.
Yeah.
And that's okay up until you get to a point where the events of one season seem to have no bearing on the next.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't feel Discovery really had that problem. Picard absolutely did between seasons 2 and 3, that were both by the same showrunner.
I could have sworn when we were in Discovery in the Mirror Universe, we implied Saru died.
In that universe, he was killed.
That's what I thought.
Because they were harvesting Kelpians for food.
But when we found Enterprise, Saru survived. When we pulled it out of the nebula or whatever, not only had Saru survived, there was a plaque praising him.
I'd have to go back to that episode.
And that was the Mirror Universe Enterprise.
It may be a question of what time frame it was in, because it's possible that Enterprise got... No, it wouldn't have been bumped out when Discovery got there. It's what happened to that Discovery. Yeah, that does seem like a little bit of a loose thread, which one could argue there is not one Mirror Universe, but again...
Yeah, that's true.
I would have love to have seen them do something where, again, you bring in Spock,
mm-hmm.
either the Ethan Peck version or maybe the Zach Quinto version from the movies or something. I mean, there's some fun, and they could still do that with Strange New Worlds. There's some really fun stuff they could do.
Yeah.
And I think Discovery was a vital part of getting Trek back on the air, back to the point it's at, where it is, over the last few years, there's been Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, Prodigy, talk of Section 31 that was going to be a TV show. Now it's probably going to be a movie, but we'll see what happens with that. I think they're going to spin a Star Trek Academy out of Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gotten back on the air, and that's a great thing. But we'll kind of see where the whole thing goes. And I think with Paramount kind of up for sale, that throws some question into it as well. Would have been nice to have a few more episodes this season. I think they usually did about 13, I guess. I thought. I could be wrong on that.
Sounds about right, because I think the whole run of the show was like 65 episodes, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds about right. I don't think they needed more episodes for the arc. I think they needed more time in the episodes for the episode outside of the arc aspect.
If you yes. know what I mean. Yes.
Because I don't feel we got a ton of character progression. We had a few characters get kicked to the wayside of, oh, they're going to fly this ship back, and we only see them in passing with no dialogue at the end.
Yeah.
And as far as end of season the final episode did fine as far as end of series, and granted, it was not originally geared to be that. They got a chance to go back and turn it into that. And that's why I think it felt like, okay, we ended the season, and then we have epilogue, 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 epilogue to kind of end the series.
Yeah, we had some very indulgent scenes in there.
Complete with, again, let's bounce forward 40 years or whatever, which was a questionable move. But it was an enjoyable series, enjoyable season, and I'm very curious what some of these actors do next.
So am I.
Doug Jones, who played Saru, did an amazing job, and I'd like to see him do some more stuff. I'm sure he will. I just hope he's given equally good material. But Sinequa, I forget her last name, played Michael Burnham.
Yeah, Sinequa, maybe Martin Green?
Sounds right. Did a terrific job. Showed a great deal of range, given how much her character evolved over the time.
Yeah.
I'm curious what she's going to do next.
The one they brought in for Rainer was really good this season.
Yes, we'd seen him in one or two other things.
Yeah.
But this is the first where he was really kind of front and center.
Yeah.
I wish they'd spend a little more time on what race is he from. It just...
Yeah.
It seemed like in quote-unquote classic Trek, eventually we'd have learned some unique thing about that race.
Yes.
You know.
Well, it seemed like he was that race because that race had been bullied, if you will, by the Breen. So he had the intimate Breen knowledge, therefore he needed to be that race.
If the only identifying thing about his race is they were subjugated by the Breen, one, it seems like other races would have been that way. But there's not even anything like, you know, who's got the Andorians have the antennas and stuff. Yeah. They could do these things and the pink skin, blue skin kind of thing, or everything with the Klingons and honor and all that, or the Vulcans and logic. It just, there was no identifiable trait for his race. Even if they had just said in passing, it's anger management issues.
That would have been funny. Yeah.
And I think they could have played that off of, if somebody had heard that, and no, it's this way. I mean, wouldn't you be upset if,
kind of? Yes. Yeah.
So there was, I think, room for improvement in that area. He was a good character and well used. And I think they were trying to do something where they were bringing in another captain, even though Burnham was still captain of Discovery.
Well, at one point, they said they wanted the gimmick of the show. My choice of words for gimmick. But anyways, they wanted it to be a different captain every season to prove that the show was about the ship, not the captain, not the crew.
I think if you want to do that bit with it's about the ship, not the captain, the crew, and I think that's a great thing to try to do, particularly if you wanted to try to do a long-running Trek show, rotate people in and out. It is a ship that is more smaller and scientific in nature, and therefore it's, we're staffing up for this mission, we're going out, we're coming back, we're rotating some people in and out, a few people stick around, they go on the next mission.
Yeah.
Almost more of a Starfleet Corps of Engineers sort of approach. And if you were to do that, and again, I haven't read the Starfleet Corps of Engineer books. There were a bunch of short stories and stuff. It's on my list to read. But if you took that kind of idea or some other very mission-centric subset of Starfleet, the advantage of doing it with the Corps of Engineers, any subspace anomaly, anything that needs repairing, anything that needs building, or analyzing and investigating, that fits.
Yeah.
And that gives you the ability to rotate people in and out, left, right, and center. And if you only have like one person who's just kind of, I'm the designated go-to person on the ship.
Yeah.
Who's quasi-engineering, quasi-command, you know, whatever. You could be rotating everybody else in and out and keeping the budget down. Because it's just who's a good guest star, who are going to get some good, I don't say B-level actors.
Yeah.
But let's face it, there is a tier of actors that are more either the character actor, the background type, or whatever, that can support a show.
Yes.
And if you're rotating them in and out and stuff, build the community, get some people back. So it's not like it's a we see them once and never again. I think that could be a fascinating approach for a long-term Trek show, because you could also have three or four of these types of ships.
Yeah.
That you rotate through. And of course, they're identical classes. So, you know, all you got to do is change up the nameplate on the bridge and you're done. So, and I really think you could do that if it's about the ship, it's about the mandate or the mission statement of that group versus who's in command this week or who's the engineer this week or whatever.
Yeah.
So it'd be fun for them to do. And I think it'd be a suitably different approach if you could find a good hook to keep it going throughout the whole thing. In other words, have enough familiar faces all the time that people don't come in and tune in. And it's like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a good stable of 30 or 40 people actor-wise, you could be bringing in on a recurring basis. Oh, we need a transporter expert. Oh, he's not available this week, so let's pull this guy in instead. Or who's the linguist or, you know, what have you.
Yeah.
But again, they're doing a Starfleet Academy show, presumably based on this. I think Tilly kind of has to be in that.
Yeah.
But I have no idea when or if that's going to come out.
Neither do I.
And if it'll be episodic or more serial narrative.
I really hope episodic.
Yeah. Again, I'm really looking forward to the next season of Strange New Worlds.
So am I.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.